This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In fall of 2023, the city of St. Louis launched a guaranteed basic income pilot to give low-income families $500 a month to use as they needed. It was one among many such programs in the U.S., but it became the only one to be halted by a lawsuit that challenged the legality of the city's making cash payments of public funds to residents. The St. Louis pilot did resume and concluded this summer. Research that was built into the pilot was released last month, and its results indicate two things. First, that the guaranteed basic income program reduced participants' economic hardship and food insecurity, increased savings and financial health, and boosted well-being. It also showed that the pause in support had immediate negative effects. Naomi Delkamiller is the reporting fellow for the Midwest Newsroom. She joins us now to talk about that research, as well as fallout from that pause in the pilot program and the future of guaranteed basic income in St. Louis. Naomi, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Naomi, to lay some groundwork, can you give us a bit of background on what a guaranteed basic income program is and how common such programs are?
Absolutely. So a guaranteed basic income program, which I may refer to as GBI, is a program where a government or a private foundation tries to supplement low-income families of the community with a basic amount, usually by month. We've seen a lot of varieties of these programs across the country, and they've really launched more in recent years as people have struggled after the pandemic with falling wages, and it's really become kind of this problem solution that a lot of cities are trying across the country.
Mm-hmm. What is that we need to know, Naomi, about how St. Louis's pilot got its start?
Mm-hmm. So this pilot was used ARPA funds, so the American Rescue Plan Act. St. Louis as a city received $500 million, and $5 million of that was approved by the Board of Aldermen to fund a guaranteed basic income program, which was $500 a month for 18 months. It totaled $9,000 per family. And what was interesting about this one is that they estimated that 20,000 people qualified, and they had a lot of different qualifications for this. They wanted to target families with children in public or charter school. They had to, one of the other requirements was, you know, living in the city of St. Louis, proof of financial hardship from the COVID-19 pandemic, a household income within certain poverty level guidelines. And they used those qualifications really to target people who were really, they felt were really in need after the pandemic. So 5,000 people ultimately applied. And with so few slots, the city ultimately had to use a lottery to select recipients.
And so there were about 540 families that were selected for this, correct?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And the money for this program, you mentioned ARPA funds, but where else did the funds come from for this?
So originally, this program was only going to be able to support 440 families, but an additional $1 million came from Jack Dorsey's Start Small Foundation, opening it up to another 100 households, totaling to 540.
Mm-hmm. Now, you had an opportunity, Naomi, to speak with some of the people who participated in St. Louis's Guaranteed Basic Income pilot, and among them was Shanice King, a single mother of three. She said that the monthly infusion of cash made a real difference.
Whenever I did apply for this program and I got approved, I was actually able to take care of all the basics in the house. I still struggled with my rent, but I still was able to keep up with my electric. I was able to put extra food in the house with cash if I ran out of food stamps, buy extra clothes and shoes for my kids if they really needed without having to stress about it. So for me, it really helped me and my family get through a tough time.
And that was St. Louis resident Shanice King. Naomi, what stood out to you about what we just heard from Shanice?
Mm-hmm. I spoke with Shawnice a couple weeks ago. She told me that she was actually pregnant when she saw headlines about this program, and she had a difficult pregnancy. She wasn't able to work, and so she was really struggling to provide for her family. So when she saw headlines about this program, she immediately applied and was actually, she told me, able to provide basic necessities for her young son, diapers, wipes, and then clothes for her older children. So mm-hmm. it just really showed that her as a single mom really benefited from the timing of this program.
Mm-hmm. Were there any stipulations around how the money could be used?
That's a great question. So one big point of GBI programs is that it's flexible money. So in some other social services, STAMP, you know, applies to food, or there's housing assistance that can help with rent. This one was really could be used for anything, minus some restrictions, such as at casinos, the debit card wouldn't work. And I think it's good to note that this money was put on a debit card that would reload each month. So if you had an issue with your car one month, that money could go there. Or say the next month you needed to get some more resources for your kid in school, it could be used on all sorts of different things. And what I heard from participants is that flexibility was so beneficial, and they haven't really been able to find any sort of program to help them in the same way since payments stopped.
Mm-hmm. And it really sounds like they were given a great deal of autonomy in deciding how they would use the funds. The program itself ended in May, research that was built into it was released, you know, some months later, and it was just last month, in fact. Talk with us about that research, which was conducted by evaluators at WashU's Brown School of Social Work, and some of its top-line findings.
Mm-hmm. The findings, so this, what's really important to note about this program as well is that this research was part of the program from the beginning. You know, it was a main point of this program to get good solid research out of it in case city leaders ever wanted to try or initiate new programs. They wanted to have data to draw on and say, this is what happened when we tried it as a pilot. So that was really interesting as well, just that it was really embedded in everything that they did. So researchers that I talked to really had a hand in this from the beginning, and they had great access to participants. They did interviews throughout the program quarterly. They had access to credit score records and spending records, and all of that really coalesces into the three briefs that were published today. Actually, they were finished in November, and I was able to have a early look at them and talk to researchers and program managers. But today they officially were released on St. Louis City website, and all of those briefs are available now to read through as well.
Mm-hmm. Another person you were speaking with was St. Louis Guaranteed Basic Income Program Manager Rebecca Belleville, and she related the testimonial of a participant who said cash that came through the pilot was life-saving.
There were participant stories in the research that came out that were very difficult to process. One parent said that this program kept their child alive because they have very expensive medication that wasn't covered in any other capacity. That was very hard to hear. The fact that this arbitrary program was keeping a child alive.
And that was Rebecca Belleville, again, program manager for the St. Louis Guaranteed Basic Income Program. Now, there's clearly emotion in Rebecca Belleville's voice. What else did you learn about how participants use their GBI funds, Naomi?
Absolutely. I mean, that was a very emotional conversation with Rebecca Belleville. She saw everything from the beginning to the end and is still part of it today. What we saw from other testimonials as well is that, for instance, there was an issue with the St. Louis Public Schools busing. So some of these extra funds were used for parents to be able to get Ubers or Lyfts in order to get their kids to school. We saw it used for a variety of other things as well. So medicine, childcare. We saw it used mostly for food and rent and these basic necessities. And it was very important, again, for these families that I heard to have that flexibility in spending.
Mm-hmm. We're talking with Naomi Delkamiller. She's the Midwest Newsroom's reporting fellow, and we're talking about the research outcomes from St. Louis's Guaranteed Basic Income program. Now, another part of this story is a lawsuit, and this pilot that had been underway and providing monthly cash payments to 540 low-income families for 6 months encountered an obstacle when a lawsuit was filed against the city of St. Louis, Comptroller Darlene Green, Treasurer Adam Lane, and the former mayor Tishara Jones. The plaintiffs were represented by a local organization called the Holy Joe Society. Naomi, what can you tell us about this lawsuit and what was its focus?
Yeah, I'll start with the fact that in a lot of these GBI pilot programs, there have been lawsuits across the country. What's interesting about St. Louis is that it was paused in the middle because of a court decision, but it then restarted. So what's very interesting about this look is that we have a very holistic data on the beginning to the end and what happened in that meantime, where other programs have been sued maybe at the beginning and don't even start. So it's a very interesting look at St. Louis here. But what I can tell you about this lawsuit is that 6 months into payments, the Holy Joe Society filed it on behalf of two residents. They argued the program violated the state's constitutional restrictions on giving public funds to private individuals. They also argued that the qualifications that I listed earlier in our conversation were against the city charter. So what was interesting that I found in my reporting is that there was an initial $500 payment issued to, I think, about 9,000 households separate from the GBI program after the pandemic, also using ARPA funds, that was not challenged by this plaintiff. Mm-hmm. And in July, so about a month after it was filed, a temporary injunction was issued. This put a pause on payments. So you'll see in the data where credit scores start to drop, debt goes back up a little bit, and it really just reflected the immediate financial strain from it. And I think Stephen Roll, he was a lead researcher from Washington University, really explained this well.
Mm-hmm. And we have some of what Stephen Roll shared about those effects and the injunction's impact on people who for already several months had been receiving payments through the pilot.
People's financial health was affected immediately just from this 1 month unexpected payment pause. Within that month, we saw payment delinquencies spike and credit scores start to decline again, reversing some of the progress they made. And I think that really speaks to, you know, the fact that for a lot of these folks, they're living incredibly precarious economic lives.
Naomi, what was so significant about that finding?
I think it just shows, you know, how many people are really just one emergency away from economic distress. And we're seeing that in all across the country. Now, the city argued that there was an exception in the Constitution that allowed for a program like this if it was shown to provide a public benefit. And Stephen Roll, who we just heard, actually had testimony for the court to show that this was actually a public benefit, and they estimated that poverty and resources, all of this, you know, cost the city quite a bit of money. But unfortunately for the defendants, this injunction did hold, causing a pause in the funds. So that's where we saw, for the researchers, for the city, we saw that their efforts were stopped for about a month. And then what happened after that is they reached out to philanthropic foundations that then did step in to continue the program till the end. But we did see that struggle in the middle of the program there, which I think is important to note.
Mm-hmm. We noted in the introduction that the Guaranteed Basic Income Program, it was undertaken by St. Louis between fall of 2023 and this past May, that it was not unique. There are almost 40 cities across the country that have implemented GBIs. And you also underscored, Naomi, that St. Louis is the only place where a lawsuit actually halted the program before it came to its conclusion. So this stop and start Clearly it was a serious disruption for the participants, but did you get a sense from the researchers that it revealed something new or different from past data that provides some guidance for future?
Right. So I actually talked to some participants who said that 1 month pause alone, when they had, you know, started to kind of, you know, expect this $500 a month to come in for the set amount of time as they had been told, actually had quite a few distressors, right? I talked to a couple individuals who lost their cars and weren't able to pay their car payments, and because of that weren't able to get transportation to work, and it kind of snowballed from there. So I think we just have these very, very unique and personal stories of what can happen, you know, when something like this is paused. But then again, see how some of these participants recovered. You know, from the data we see that credit scores start to rebound and all of that. We see what happened, you know, when the money stops and then when it restarts. And I think it just offers, and the researchers that I talked to agree, just a very interesting perspective on these programs.
Mm-hmm. So what is happening now with the Holy Joe Society, and how might that affect the future of guaranteed basic income programs in St. Louis?
So right now it's a temporary injunction. And as of November 25th, the Holy Joe Society and their attorney filed for a permanent injunction, which would mean that the city would not be able to do programs like this in the future. It would be decided. But right now it is a temporary injunction. I do not know when the permanent injunction may be decided on, but what that could do is it could really limit the city in the future from being able to do any sort of program like this. And mm-hmm. I talked to the city treasurer, Adam Lane, who talked about how they have ideas in the future for more assistance programs like this as a support to other social welfare programs. So it does seem like a tool for the city to use, but it's not quite certain if they'll be able to use it.
Mm-hmm. The last part of your story, Naomi, I want to make sure we get to, because it addresses the realities that some of the GBI participants have faced since the program ended in May, and among them, the EF3 tornado that tore through parts of St. Louis, you know, damaged homes, schools, and businesses, and then there was the government shutdown, which not only affected income, but also SNAP benefits. So the GBI program we've been talking about, it was a pilot. And it finished just before a period of what I would call, you know, unique and acute distress. In talking with the researchers and the participants, did you get a sense that they're motivated to see guaranteed basic income become a more permanent or future measure for addressing poverty at the local level?
Absolutely. I mean, I heard from participants. So again, for the listeners, the payments ended May of 2025. And as we know, that was right before all of these different things happened and really hit these participants hard. I mean, a few that I talked to do not have any savings left from the program. Everything had to be used. One lost work for quite a few weeks because they worked in a clinic that was funded by the government. SNAP ran out. There were all these additional distressors. And when I talked to the researchers, they just really highlighted that how many families are really at the mercy of some of these bigger political and environmental issues that are out of their control. Mm-hmm. And I guess their feeling was that these funds can help buffer some of those impacts.
Okay. Naomi Delcamiller is the reporting fellow for the Midwest Newsroom. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much.
This episode was produced by Darius Varner.
Audio engineering and sound design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.